So welcome. We're starting session 10. Somebody wrote me something the other day and said, now we're getting close to the end of the program, and that's actually true. We've been going for quite a while now, really. And so after this, we have two more sessions, which will focus on knowledge. This is our last session on space. And in this session, we're mostly working our way through the last part of the space section of dynamics, but actually, more so than last in the last session, we're going to be also looking at a couple of other things. So for next week, for instance, we have a reading from Knowledge of Time and Space. So there are advantages and disadvantages to doing that. I really enjoyed in the last session the kind of momentum. I know that's a charged word in TSK, but still the momentum of really working our way through dynamics, which does have a very powerful momentum, it seems to me, in the space section. And we'll be doing some of that. But the advantage, of course, of reading some other things is twofold. First of all, it introduces us or reminds us of the resources that are available in other books. And second, it may give us the opportunity to make connections that we wouldn't otherwise make. So that's the basic idea for this session. As I mentioned in the orientation, and I want to repeat it now because it's important, it seems to me, is there have been some changes in the schedule. So you can look up the new schedule on the website. And I've had to adjust the starting dates for sessions 11 and 12. It really all grows out of the fact that we had to change the date of the retreat. So in particular, before the final session, there'll be a long break, and we'll try to make use of that in a fruitful way. Somebody says my videos, in fact, everybody says my video has stopped showing up. Well, let me try going back into video. Let me see. Okay. How's that?
Better.
Right. It's a kind of a yes-no thing, right? So it's working. Okay. Okay. Or maybe I look better now. That's possible, true, too. Okay, so let's get started on this session, this chapter, which is a wonderful chapter, seems to me. But of course, I really, I get enthusiastic over and over again. So I think it's great what we're doing. Now, the chapter, the guiding theme in this chapter, or the guiding image, is that we could flatten space. And as I said in When It Rains, and I think it's kind of an obvious point, that kind of goes against the grain, as we say in English. It sounds like a surprising thing that you would want to do, because usually we think of flattening as losing something. We lose a dimension. It's not as rich. It's not as alive. So what Rinpoche is pointing to in this image, I think, is very subtle, and we want to take some time to work it through. So I think a good place to start is actually not right at the beginning of the chapter, but on page 44, and I quoted this in When It Rains also. There's a line at the top of the page that says, the nature of flattened appearance would be transformed at a fundamental level. And so the question is, what is the nature of that transformation? And I'm going to try to make what seems to me the central point about flattening space right now, right at the beginning, and then we can try to work out the implications a little bit. So when you flatten appearance, and in order to do that, we'll talk about that in a moment, you have to flatten space. But right now, let's just focus on the idea that if you flatten space, then whatever appears in space is flattened too. So what does it mean to say that appearance is flattened? Well, It's very consistent with what we were looking at, have been looking at so far for a while. Okay, Klaus asks, what is around flattened space? Oh, no, there's nothing around. If you flatten space, you flatten all the dimensionality. It doesn't mean that now it's only two-dimensional, right? It's not like you go from three dimensions to two. Flattening space sounds like that, and that's why it's I think, difficult for, as a concept. But flattened space, well, let me go on with what I was about to say. Or I see that David asks a question too. Let me go ahead and make what I was going to say, which seems to me to be the fundamental point, and then I'll look at David's question. So the fundamental point is this. In ordinary space, space that hasn't been flattened, that's the space of substance. And mostly we think of it as connected with the physical world, right? Space and objects in the world. And in ordinary space, whatever shows up has substance. And what we see is something like the surface of the substance, right? So if I look at a chair in front of me, I see the shape of the chair. I could draw the shape of the chair. But I know that the chair has an interior to it. It has a reality to it. It has a thingness to it. And partly that means, you know, that if I cut open the cushion on the chair, there'd be something inside. It wouldn't be hollow. But it's more fundamental than that, really. It's that in order for something to show up in ordinary space, it has to have this substantiality, this thingness. Now, in flattened space, that's what gets flattened out. That's what, you know, it's like it's like the air inside the balloon. You pop the balloon and the air goes. So when you flatten space, you pop substance. It disappears. It vanishes. Or that's not really right at all. It just isn't substantial anymore. So in flattened space, substance is not substantial. That doesn't mean, and this is kind of the key point, it seems to me, that when I look at the chair now, I say, oh, chair, you're trying to fool me into thinking that you have substance, but I know that you're just this kind of three-dimensional drawing in space or something like that. No, substance continues to appear, but that's all that it does. It appears. So the chair claims to be substantial, and that claim is also appears. You know, the chair appears as a substantial entity. And that claim is part of its appearance. And it's nothing more than that. So flattened space is space that just allows appearance. It doesn't allow substance as substance. It allows the appearance of substance, and that's all we ever have to begin with. So in a certain sense, you say nothing has changed, right? It's just that now we understand that what appears is as substance is just appearance. Substance is another version of appearance. Let me give you an analogy. Of course, this whole thing is a metaphor, but because I, you know, it's a kind of subtle point. So I think this analogy is helpful. It's one that we've used before, but in this context, it's a little different. And that is a dream, right? When you wake up from a dream and you think back, you know, at least for a moment, maybe the content, what happened in the dream, is available to you, but in the dream, while you were in the dream, usually, it's, you know, you imagine that what was in the dream is substantial. That's the reality of things. And then when you wake up, you look back at the dream and all of the same experiences there, but it's been flattened, I think, in the sense that Rinpoche means here. It doesn't have substance anymore, right? The appearance is exactly the same, but you no longer accept the claim of substantiality. It's just an appearance. Oh, that was just a dream. And so in that sense, you could say that that flattening space is like saying things appear in the same way that they appear in a dream. So you might ask, well, you know, why not just talk about dreams then? Why not just use that image? It's a well-established image, and it's fine. It's a good image. But this is a different image. And when you use different images, you know, words have power, images have power. And when you use a different image, in this case, the image of flattening space and therefore flattening appearance, then you have an opportunity to see something new. And I think in this case, it helps you understand something about substance, and it helps you to understand something about dimensionality. Because the whole sense that we live in this three-dimensional world, and that, you know, I don't know what other words to use, that conveys substance, all of that gets called into question if you think in terms of a flattened space. The world still appears as dimensionalized, as having three dimensions. That's part of what appears. It doesn't go beyond appearance. There's just appearance. Okay, now let me go back and look at the question from David. It seems to me Rinpoche is using the term flattening, says David, as a way to conceptualize the not at the outset, as a way to point to an unnameable feeling, perhaps, at the outset of experience, the open now. Am I wrong? Well, no, you're not wrong. I'm not sure. I mean, I'd really have to think about how to tie that into the not. I think that's... So let me give you a response, but it's not... You know, that is also a very subtle concept, you could say, and so what I'm saying now may not be quite right. But if you say... let's see... if you think of appearance as the not, then the flattening might be the not. I think I'll leave it at that because I'm not very confident in what I just said. But perhaps that's helpful to think about. Your second way of saying that is easier to respond to for me. You say as a way to point to an unnameable feeling at the outset of experience, the open now. Well, Rinpoche does talk a little bit about openness here in connection with flattening space, and he does talk about the zeroless, which is related. I think you're very right to point toward a feeling here, and I think there's a wonderful logic to what Rinpoche says here, but of course it doesn't do us much good just as a logical point. We have to somehow, we have to be able to engage it or get a sense of the power of it. I was going to say the truth of it, but truth is maybe, you know, too much tied into substance. But the power of this vision in which appearance is simply appearance. Okay? And it doesn't point beyond itself to something else. That assumption that there's this substance that points beyond, or there's someone who sees through appearance, the self, of course, who sees through appearance to something beyond appearance, those are exactly the kinds of things that are being questioned. So yes, I think there's, you know, you call it unnameable, that feeling, and no, that's right. And yet, Rinpoche is trying to name it, or at least point towards it. Okay. And, okay, David goes on to say, so allowing or allows appearance as transparent. And yes, transparent is a good word, and transitive, transitional, which is a word we looked at the end of the last session. It comes up once in this chapter, and maybe we'll have a chance to point toward it again. I think, you know, that idea of one of the nice things about the word trance, and remember I pointed you towards vision of knowledge, or about the prefix trance, is, you know, it has this quality of transparent, and also... transition of a moving and a not establishing, all of that is in it. So although Rinpoche doesn't use it very often, doesn't ever elaborate on it in the TSK books except in Visions of Knowledge at one point. I think it's a good word in TSK. Okay, Michael asks a question. Does appearance have any medium, such as smoke requiring air to move through? If space is the medium for appearance, what causes that appearance to have apparent shape and dimensions? Well, okay, this is another good question, and another one that's hard to say too much about without spending quite a bit of time, I think. But I do think that it's very much related to what Rinpoche is saying here. When appearance appears, space appears. Appearance is the appearance of space. It's nothing else. And that's why Rinpoche can say things like, that famous statement at the beginning of Time, Space, and Knowledge that space is projecting space into space. There's nothing else. I've actually written something about that in one of the Perspectives books, but in this context, we can say, I think it actually is easier to see what's being pointed at. Space appears, in one sense, like everything else. Appearance is appearance, and what's a good way to say this? It appears like everything else, but it's not like everything else. Everything that appears is the appearance of space, and that appearance is the only way that space appears. But it's the kind of universal way that space appears. Everything that appears is space appearance. So appearance doesn't require space as a medium. Appearance is space. Okay, let's try to... And so why does it have apparent shape and dimensions? Well, because things have been set up in that way. That has to do with the names and the naming and interpretation, which Rinpoche talks about a little at the end of this chapter. I don't think we'll get there in the phone call. But okay, let me go on, because there's many, many important things to talk about here. Okay, so when you get, when you flatten space, and we're still looking, now I go back to the first paragraph in the chapter, and he's talking in that, he starts off by saying, suppose we could flatten space. And then he asks us, would that help us move to a no-body space? And I think we could understand that in terms of what we've been saying as a no-substance space, right? A no-content space. But it's very interesting that he calls this the no-body space of knowledgeability. So I want to take a little bit of time to go into that, because it's really key. In our ordinary understanding of space, so what he calls here occupied physical space, right? There are things in space. We don't have to make a judgment about whether that's only physical space, although that's how people usually think about it. It could also be mental space. But let's stay with physical space. There is occupied physical space, and there are things. And those things are what you know, right? That's what's available to be known. And when you know in that way, then there has to be a knower, and there has to be an act of knowing. That's the basic structure that we rely on when we're dealing in ordinary space, which is exactly why we want to be able to question ordinary space, and why doing so is such a powerful aspect of the vision. Knowing, the subject knowing objects is our ordinary structure. But if we flatten space, and that means that substance loses its claim to substantiality, then appearance is knowledgeable as part of appearance. When something appears, it appears as known or knowable. right? There's no other possibility. That's true in any sense, really. But here it becomes extremely clear. In a space that doesn't have any, you know, any hidden interior, any substance that needs to be known, and doesn't have some mysterious act of knowing that's on the subjective side, then the knowability and the knowledgeability all come together in appearance. It's just absolutely given. And so I think that's why he says and can say that no body space is a space of knowledgeability. So knowledge is now part of what appears, or knowledge is in what appears, and the knowing is in what appears, and the knowability, all the different dimensions and aspects into which we usually separate out the structure of knowing or knowledge, they all come together. It's all the same thing, you know. There's nothing that has to be owned, and knowledge isn't located anywhere else, and there's nothing you have to do in order to know. There's no separate activity of knowing. It's all there. And so Rinpoche can say, he can say that nothing is excluded, right? Let's see if I can find that. It comes up in the discussion on page 44, where he's talking about there being no properties. In order for there to be properties, there has to be an owner of the properties. And there are no properties, he says on page 44. And there are no structures founded on ownership. Right? So the edge opens into fullness. Well, that has something to do with, the edge you could think is appearance. But the point is that everything, including the claims of content and the claims of knowability and all of the stuff that we normally use to structure our world, and I'm using stuff in, as a kind of technical term here, just to mean everything. The whole system, you could say the field communique, which is a little bit nicer than just stuff. So the field communique gives us all these different structures. And that's one way of trying to arrive at fullness. But Rinpoche says here, no, the edge, which is appearance, that opens into fullness. Everything is there. Nothing is lost. But it's only there as appearance. And that includes knowledgeability. And it means that nothing is excluded. Right? When dimensionality says, about five lines from the bottom of page 44, he says, when dimensionality is flattened, nothing is excluded. And I hope that what we've been saying kind of clarifies that. Now, Rinpoche also points out, and I've already said it a few times, that, I haven't said it in these words. He says we're flattened too, right? So in other words, the knower is flattened. And I think we will, let me say something about that. He says at the top of page 44, he says, we probably wouldn't even notice it. He says, assuming we made it through this operation, we might notice no difference in what appeared whatsoever. And there are different reasons for thinking that's so, but right now we're saying it's because we would be part of this flattening operation. And actually, just saying that right now, it reminds me of what people say about black holes. It's like, if you fell into a black hole, well, you'd be torn apart. I just read something about that yesterday that said you'd be spaghettified, whatever that means. Sounds a little gruesome, actually. If you could imagine you fell into a black hole and actually nothing would change because everything was in the black hole along with you. Well, that's too negative an image for what we're talking about here. But the point is that we are a part of this flattening, and what that means, and so this is why it's relevant. That's just sort of a logical point, you might say, but no, it's actually an extremely significant point for the way we live our lives. Because what does it mean to say that we think of ourselves as substantial? We think of ourselves as the knower. Well, partly it means that we are a we're this kind of black box. Rinpoche writes about that in Love of Knowledge. You know, we're mysterious, like we, you know, the one that knows in our capacity to know. We can't say anything about that. But also, the way that we understand ourselves is in terms of our needs and our wants and our emotions, our concerns, all of the things that we use to structure the world. And all of those are flattened too. Right. And so again, what does that flattening mean? It means that our emotions, our reactivity, our concerns, our wishes, all of that appears. You know, it's not like we have to leave it behind. It's not like there's something wrong with it. But it doesn't have the claim of substance. And ordinarily it does. That's why it appears very often, right? If we feel sad and we accept that sadness as being substantial, as being something true, then that feeds the sadness. It's that accepting, that believing the claim that's being made, that's what fuels the sadness. If we don't accept it as substantial, but just as appearance, then, you know, kind of paradoxically, it may well disappear, because in order to keep appearing, we have to buy into it. And that's true in a general way, but it's especially true for our interior world, you could say. So we really need to be able to understand that. And when we do, then that's when things really can open up. You know, you can... One of the things that, you know, I think one possible way of misunderstanding TSK is to think that it only applies to the external world, you know, because we're talking about space and time, and knowledge is a little different, but we've learned to think of those as having to do with the external world. But no, you know, it's our meaningful world that we're investigating here, right? So when we let go of that, then we open into fullness. So that's another way of understanding the phrase, the edge opens into fullness. It's a different kind of fullness. So Michael says here, wonderful, good. The sense that appearance is the knowability and knowledgeability of space is so much more welcoming than the split into known substance swimming in unknowable, empty space. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I've quoted this line a few times, but whenever it pops up in my mind, I like to quote it. You know, at the very beginning of the modern era, Pascal writes, the infinite, what is it, the absolute silence of infinite space terrifies me. I may not have that quite right. But the modern era really starts, in some ways, with turning space into this unknowable emptiness, and turning time into this measured out, unending sequence. That's not necessarily the way you understand time before the modern era or space. And so yes, we're stuck with that view. And TSK is a response. I think that's one reason Rinpoche works in terms of time and space and knowledge. Okay, I think I'm going to skip over, I guess, the part about the zero-less. We probably will have a chance to come back to that later, just in the interest of moving forward, because I want us to do some practice, and then there's some wonderful material toward the end of the chapter that I really want to be sure we get to also. So, okay. There is another way to talk about this right at the bottom of page 44 and 45, but talk about what we've been talking about. We just looked at the notion that nothing is excluded, he uses a nice image about, you know, it's like unzipping something. It's right, you've got this thing that looks like it's solid, but then you unzip it and it just falls away. That's like opening the box. I think that was chapter 2 in Dynamics. But anyway, I want to go to what he says after that. He says, all is equally available everywhere, for everywhere is anywhere, and each edge opens into the whole, even the edge of the edge opens. We are inside, and there is no outside. And that sense of the whole, it's like there is nothing left out, and there's nowhere you need to go. We are already inside, and there's no outside. And then he goes on in that chapter, this is where he talks about the transitional, or in that paragraph, where he talks about the transitional. Though manifestations of energy may move toward particularity, and that was the question about why does appearance show up in a particular form, you know? Though manifestations of energy may move toward particularity, the particles that form in this way remain transitional. And we talked about transitional a little at the end of the last session, and I said it's not just that they move, it's that nothing is ever established. No substance is ever established. So that's another way to look at it. So because we're inside and there's no outside and there's no reaching out to know something, there is this kind of universal knowingness. And that's how space, you could say great space, that's not at all, it never gets talked about in Dynamics, but in other places, of course, you could say, you know, great space gives you great knowledge. It's a universal knowledgeability. So I want to look at the second chapter on page 45, and I think it will help, second paragraph, sorry, on page 45. I think it will help kind of summarize this, and then on the basis of that, I'd like to have us do a few minutes to really try to practice with this. So here it is. It's the one right after the heading. Space in its zeroless appearing allows substance to dissolve. So we've been talking a lot about how substance, pops, but it gets flattened. But here he uses the image dissolve, and he's going to work with that image. But substance does not dissolve in space as sugar dissolves in water, losing its form. Well, substance keeps its form, right? Nor does it lose its density, like a stick of burning incense, slowly transforming to ash. Which is a beautiful image, I think, if you light incense sometimes. So it's not that substance vanishes, you know, its form disappears, and it's not that it becomes somehow ghost-like. Substance remains substantial, but, you know, I can't really say that. Because it's not substantial in the way that we understand substantial. Okay, let me keep reading. Zeroless space appearing allows substance to appear as the appearance of substance. It accommodates the history of substance, its arising, and the fullness of its presence. So nothing is left out, right? We are inside and there's no outside. It accommodates the history of substance, its arising, and the fullness of its presence. And then he says something that is not so important for us right now, although it's very interesting. All this is available to be documented and authenticated, to be investigated and given structure through the range of disciplines fostered by ordinary knowledge. I guess what's interesting for us in that right now is to say, you know, there's nothing wrong with ordinary knowledge. It's all there. It's everything is available to be understood and investigated, and that's what counts as knowledge. But it's all this dissolved substance, which is just appearance, flattened appearance appearing, because that's what happens in the act of flattening space. That's what he's saying. Okay, so one way you could. I started to think about this when I was preparing for class. I thought, you know, we say substance appears, and that affirms the notion of substance. But in a way, what's being said here is that you should flip that around and say appearance substances, you know, turning substance into a verb. And then I looked up in the Oxford English Dictionary what, you know, because substance is not a verb. But usually there's been something. Anyway, you could just say appearance substantiates in a kind of an obsolete version of substantiate. Appearance creates substance, but it does so without ever departing from being appearance. That's really the point.
Materializes.
Materializes is good. It is good. I'd have to think about bringing the word matter in here. You know, there are certain, I mean, that would require a little thinking through. But yeah, I think if you took the word materialize literally, you know, it matterizes. you sometimes you have to take these words, and Rinpoche does this a lot, of course. He takes a word that's almost our usual word, but he twists it a little bit so that you have to think about what is actually being said. So yeah, materializes is probably very good. It makes the point more if you say it matterizes, appearance matterizes. Or you could even say appearance matters. And then that becomes a play on word, which Rinpoche has used. You know, he's written a book called Mind Over Matter, which suggests that play. Okay, all of that is meant to lead us to a practice. And it's a practice precisely on this fairly subtle point, which is why, you know, we've taken some time to lay it out. What we'd like to be able to do for a few minutes now is to see, if you just look around you, or you could do it inwardly, but however you want to do it, probably it's easier with matter, with the external world. If you let that world be present with the sense that although nothing is denied, nothing is negated, it's all just appearance. You know, I look at the chair, and there's the chair's solidity, and there's this kind of dim sense of the chair having been manufactured, and perhaps the memory of when I bought the chair, and all of that stuff is going on. Right? It's there, but it's only appearance, and no claim of substance can be accepted as the truth of the matter. So let's try that. Let's try that for a few minutes now. And see where that leads you. And you know, it's going to take a couple of minutes, I think, to get into that. So we'll do it for about 5 minutes. Okay. Okay, so let's come back together. I missed the comment by Ron at the end of the last section. We were substances. He likes substances as a verb. That's what he says. Appearance, substances.
Appearance. Yeah, it seems like knowledge materializes space.
Knowledge materializes space. Do you mean ordinary knowledge?
I think knowledge in form, knowledge in all form gives space substance.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm just trying to make that distinction between ordinary and the kind of knowledgeability, let's say, that we're looking at here.
I would say great knowledge materializes space.
Oh, that's interesting. So I'm using...
Knowing materializes.
Yeah. Well, so you're saying it a little bit differently, I think, than I would, which is that for me, materializing or substantializing... Well, I can work my way back into your position, I think. Materializing or substantializing, let's say, space, it takes us in the direction of ordinary knowledge, because now we're claiming that there is substance or there is matter. But I think what I understand what you're saying to be that when appearance manifests as what's been materialized or what has substance, that too is the activity of knowledge. Is that...
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like earlier Michael said, what is it that gives form to space?
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like knowledge gives form to space.
Right.
Even in the ordinary, I think even in
right.
the ordinary
right.
Way of knowing. So it's at both levels.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right, also in the ordinary. And in fact, that leads me to one comment I'll make about the practice we just did, and then we'll start looking at the comments that people are making. And that is that there is this very strong tendency, it's in TSK and it shows up in meditative traditions too, to feel that if you have a different vision or a different understanding, then you shouldn't react to things in the same way. You know, so if you look around and there's some object in front of you, let's say, that evokes a reaction, positive or negative, and then you say to yourself, oh, but, you know, now I know that that's just appearance, and so therefore it's wrong for me to react to it. And I don't think that's true, you know. I think that the reactivity is also a part of what appears. So that's why I say this is a pretty subtle, very subtle distinction. You know, the world is as it is, our reactions are as they are, but there is something that has fundamentally changed. And that's why the analogy with a dream is always helpful, because, you know, in the dream we were busy reacting and then we wake up, or maybe we wake up in the dream, but that's kind of complicates things. But we wake up, and the dream is what it is, although now it's gone, it's in the past, but it's very different because it's just what appeared in the dream. Okay, well, let me take a look at how people have been commenting. I see, I missed a couple. Okay, so David says, looking around, absent the naming. Now, Rinpoche does say some interesting things, just a couple of things at the end of this chapter about naming and interpreting. I don't think we'll have time to get to that. Looking around, absent the naming. Leaves, noticing colors, not naming them. Notice the feel of color, the enjoyment, the feel good of arrangements, of appearance. Noticing the arising, interior arisings, motion of thoughts inside, falling snow outside. Okay. I have no comment. It's very nice. The noticing, that takes us in a good direction. And John says, what comes right away is, to whom does appearance appear? My eyes see appearance, but my eyes are appearance as well. It seems that space is appearing to space. I have to be included in appearance. Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think that's an interesting way of working with that phrase, space is projecting space into space. You know, you could say space is appearing to space. I think that's good. Absolutely. You know, the I has to be included. And again, to come back to the end of the chapter, which we won't really be able to address, but Rinpoche talks about the relationship between the mental and the physical. I'll say something about that in the orientation. Ron says, it sounds like a first cause. I'm not sure what you're referring to. I think you're probably referring to what Hayward said. But correct me if I'm wrong. And I base that... Oh, he says yes. Okay. Because you then go on and say, but knowledge then sounds separate from space. And so the right way to go further with that, to investigate, you know, the discussion that Hayward and I had, would be to say, well, probably that's not right if knowledge is separate from space. So how can we how would it make sense to say that knowledge materializes space? That's what Hayward says. You know, without thinking of that,
space reveals itself as knowledge.
Okay, space reveals itself as knowledge. That's getting closer to some of the ways that it gets talked about in this chapter. Or knowledge reveals itself in space. I think probably a first cause model is not what Hayward had in mind, but you two guys can explore that. Okay. Let's see. Karen says, less heaviness in mental space. Yeah, so that's related, I think, to what I was saying, that, you know, our substance, you know, our sort of as individual personalities, our substance has to do with our thoughts and our emotions and so on. And if we start to see those as appearance, if we flatten them, then I said they might dissolve, and I think less heaviness is also a very good way of saying that. Eliana says, it seems to me that being part of the whole environment, feeling and sensing its qualities, instead of dividing it into things I can name, can point to a dimensionless or a space without substance. It is the knowing mind that fragments the environment to know it better. Well, that's a really good observation. And it did seem to me in doing the practice that, you know, I had given the example of looking at a chair, but you know, it seems like the good place to start really is with the whole sense of being here. Or another way to say that might be the field communique. You know, it's not like this gets communicated or that gets communicated, but there's the whole. And then the way in which the mind does divide things up and does name things and fragments things, that's part of appearance too. Remember Rinpoche says here very specifically, let me quote it because it's so relevant to what you say, Eliana. He says, substance can appear as the appearance of substance. It accommodates the history of substance, its arising, and the fullness of its presence. So part of that history, if you are already engaged in a certain kind of inquiry, is the way in which the mind fragments things, divides things up in order to see. Okay. Ron comments on John's comment, which he says, okay, my eyes see appearance, but my eyes are appearance as well, and Ron says that sounds like seeing with knowing eyes. Yeah, that's a good way to say it too. And Michael says, and I think that's our last one, which is good because then I want to go on and make one really substantial, it seems to me, point. Well, I have one point I want to make. So Michael says, looking around with the sense that what I see is appearance in space created an effect that seems paradoxical. The tree branches seem more vivid. Very interesting. I noticed two birds nestled within their feathers in the branches that had at first merged with the branches. It felt strange to notice more in the realm of appearance outside my window through looking at everything as the branching of appearance in open space. Yeah, I think that's a nice observation. And it, yeah, kind of sounds a paradoxical, but maybe it's related to what Eliana says. If you're not dividing things up, you know, so often, and this came up in an earlier chapter, you see something and seeing it means you kind of throw it away. You know, you say, well, I know what that is. And you throw it away before you ever get to experience it because you just have the name. You know? So it doesn't surprise me that there'd be an opening into a greater wholeness. Okay, I want to make one point, and let's see if I can kind of take it out of context a little bit, because I think it's really good to be thinking about. So in the first full paragraph on page 46, Rinpoche says, within the ordinary, and maybe this relates to what you just said, Michael, within the ordinary, the extraordinary is active. The moment we look behind the established point, appearance and its derivation become questionable in fruitful ways. What appears to be so appears in a new light. And then he says it can have different qualities depending on how we look. And all of that is related to what you said, Michael, but this notion of appearance and its derivation as becoming questionable. I want to focus there for a moment. Really, I mostly want to focus on the word questionable. And in English, I don't know about German, which is the other language I know pretty well. I don't know if this is the same connotation. But in English, usually when we use the word questionable, it means something like suspicious. We don't really believe it. It's questionable. That's not what's being said here, it seems to me. It literally means questionable. It means that you can question it. And when you question what appears, that's when you may be able to discover the extraordinary that's active within the ordinary. And then Rinpoche asks, in the next paragraph, he asks some questions. I was really struck reading this by the significance of this. He says, are we drawn to challenge substance and identity in accord with this space accommodation? Does such a move serve our purposes? If we think otherwise, or if we feel fear falling into abstraction or blankness, we may want to look again. So let me stop there for one moment. The reason this struck me, this paragraph struck me, is that this is the question, I think, that comes up for people if they look into TSK a little bit. You know, they may say, well, I don't really need to do all this. You know, I'd much rather meditate and find a kind of inner peace, let's say. That's a shorthand. I'd much rather do that. I don't want to be doing all this challenging of substance and identity, and it's abstract, and it just makes me think too much. I'm sure you've all heard people say that. You may even have had those thoughts at different times. And so Rinpoche says here, if we don't find it valuable to do that, we may want to look again. And then he asks, in the second half of that paragraph, he says, does the understanding we currently enact serve our purposes? Swept into the service of a truth that leads immediately into limitation, are we conducting the lives that we would wish? And I was really struck reading that. You know, that's really, why would you do TSK at all? Right? I mean, you could say, why would you do any practice? But why would you do TSK? It's because we suspect that the understanding we currently enact doesn't serve our purposes. And I suppose that maybe some other understanding is possible. Right? And we have the sense that we are not conducting the lives that we would wish. That's why you would do this kind of inquiry. And so, you know, sort of underline it in red in the sense of saying, what's TSK all about? It's based on, it grows out of this sense that things are not right, right? That our current understanding doesn't serve our purposes. And this little passage, this little phrase in between the two things I just read, the serving our purposes and conducting the lives we would wish is really also very important, because he says what happens is, what leads us into limits, let's say, what robs us of our freedom, is that we're swept into the service of a truth that leads immediately into limitation. And there is a sense in the TSK vision of saying, it's so easy to be swept into the service of a truth. It may be ordinary truth, it may be some kind of what we think of as a higher truth, or some truth that's achievable through meditative realization or whatever. As long as we're swept into the service of a truth, we are being led into limitation. And in the end, that may be a bar to conducting the lives that we would wish. Okay, so we'll stop there for today. Thank you very much, everybody. I did keep you a little long, but that's how it is.